Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw Meets on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, your host, Jim Smallman. Today, we're talking to the wonderful Mr. Drake Maverick, someone I've known for a few years, a good friend of mine. Someone I've wanted to get on the podcast for a little while, and we happen to be in the same hotel in London, so we had a bit of a chat a few weeks ago. Hope you enjoy listening to us have a natter. He's a genuinely good dude, one of the best people I've met since I've been involved in professional wrestling over the course of the last 6 years or so. Just a really genuinely nice guy, very, very funny guy, and doing a great job with 205 Live. In WWE at the moment. Here's a little tip for you. If you haven't seen it already, check out the match between Cedric Alexander and Buddy Murphy for the Cruiserweight title on 205 Live last week. It's a fantastic match. I tweeted about it. It's a genuinely phenomenal contest, and I would heartily recommend that you check it out. Also, on a WWE front, you may well have noticed that the brackets have been announced for the WWE United Kingdom tournament, which is starting at Download Festival this coming weekend, and then I think it's the quarterfinal stages hit the first night of the two nights at Royal Albert Hall on June the 18th and 19th. I would recommend checking that out if you can. Obviously, I know a lot of the people involved because a lot of the people involved have worked for Progress at some point or another, but I am super excited to go to those shows at Royal Albert Hall and recommend you pop along as well. Some other plugs to do. Obviously, check out everything on the Distraction Pieces Network, because it's all good, and I'm really proud about being part of the network, and still super pleased that 2 years ago, Scroobius Pip asked me to be involved, and admittedly, I'm not putting out the podcast as often as I would like at the minute, hoping to get back to putting them out once a week soon, but as you can all appreciate, I've been a little bit busy over the last couple of months, and it's been a little bit tricky to do that. Of course, check out my wrestling company, Progress Wrestling, progresswrestling.com for tickets, demand-progress.com for on-demand content. So we have a show coming up this Sunday, June the 10th, in Sheffield. Last time I checked, and I am recording this a little while before, there were still a handful of tickets available. There'll be over 900 people in the O2 Academy in Sheffield. And even cooler, we have the artist now known as Stephanie Newell, formerly Nixon Newell, now signed to NXT, formerly of Progress and loads of cool promotions in the United Kingdom. She's coming back to challenge for our women's title, challenging our new champion, Ginny. So if you do get a chance to come along to that, please do. ProgressWrestling.com for tickets, demand-progress.com for all of our on-demand content. And my website is jimsmorman.com. On there now, there's a little section for me book, which is called I'm Sorry I Love You, A History of Professional Wrestling. It's out on August the 23rd. Lots of people have pre-ordered it, which is genuinely very touching. I found out last week that there's an audiobook for it coming out, and I've got to record the audiobook. So if you like this podcast, you're going to love the audiobook, because it's my voice for several hours. So I am getting to do that. But there's a little section on jimsmorman.com where you can find various ways to pre-order my book, either from Amazon or from Waterstones at the moment, and a bit of information about it. You'll also notice on my website, under the live section, where I would normally have all my stand-up gigs, there aren't any. For I am going on a sabbatical from stand-up comedy to try and work full-time in professional wrestling for a little while, see how I get on. I might come back to comedy, I might do my own tours, I might go back to club gigs at some point, but as it stands at the moment, I have taken all of my club gigs for the rest of 2018 out of my diary. So apologies if you were planning on coming along to see me. But something had to give. I had to choose one job that I preferred over another. And much as I've loved comedy, and comedy's been very kind to me over the course of the last 13 years, it was time for me to concentrate on wrestling, which I prefer, if I'm being honest. So who knows? I might come back to comedy. I'm going to do one final gig this coming Wednesday in Sheffield because it's for a friend of mine. And then that's pretty much it for a while. The only place you'll ever get my comedy is in very loose forms on this podcast and when I ring announce at Progress. So yeah, it's a big deal for me to do it. I wrote a blog about it. That's on my website as well. Like, go to jimsmallman.com, click on blog, and it's the top blog there. And you can read about why I decided to make the choice to do it. Anyway, you're one of the reasons I've been able to do it, because you listen to this podcast and you've helped me grow in the world of wrestling through listening to this podcast. So thank you very much for doing that. Keep rating, reviewing and subscribing to this podcast, telling new people about it and all that jazz. It makes me very happy when you do that. I'm very happy when people just tweet me out of the blue to say how much they enjoy the podcast, because it means a lot to me, because I love wrestling and I love you guys. So anyway, here's me chatting to Drake Maverick. Enjoy yourself, and do remember, check out 205 Live on the WWE Network, which he is a massive part of with his incredibly sharp sense of dress. Right, I will see you on the other side to wrap things up at the end. Cheers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So, important question. Drake Maverick.
Yep. We've got Ransom on in the background, too. I have to mute Mel Gibson.
Let's mute that.
Shall we mute Mel Gibson? Mel Gibson. Okay. Give me back my son! Give me back my son! All right, he's done. Sorry, Mel Gibson. Who would win in a fight? Mel Gibson as Martin Riggs.
Yep.
Or Bruce Willis as John McClane. Go.
Bruce Willis as John McClane.
Why?
It's just better in a vest.
Do you not think the fact that Riggs has always got Murtoff would be a problem?
Yeah, but he's always one day away from retirement, isn't he?
Well, he is. They both had their their token partner, though, Sergeant Al Powell in the first one.
I this is leading directly into my question about being called Drake Maverick.
Oh God, I look nothing like Drake. Have you noticed?
Well, so did you come up with the name Drake Maverick?
Absolutely not.
I'm really sad now.
You know me. You know full well what I would have called myself, like Dalton or something from Roadhouse or something. You know what I'm really happy about? That I do. I'm wearing a Maverick t-shirt from Top Gun right now, and I'm very happy with the Maverick part. It literally was. You're going to be called this. Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. Absolutely. I love it. And I do. I do. It's, everywhere I go, I don't feel it sank in yet, but, I don't mind being called Maverick when people stop me, because,
That's a great name.
I'm Tom Cruise, you know?
Well, see,
I fly a plane.
So, when
permission to fly by.
When your name was announced, I remember looking at it and going, I know him. I know he appreciates a film from the 1980s. This is the greatest name of all time.
Supercop Drake Maverick. Well, little story about the name.
Okay.
So I've known Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, for many, many years. It's good to see him again. Mm. Daniel Bryan was a big part of this segment. But also, Bryan has a very, very select sense of humour, just like myself, and could not stop laughing at the name backstage. to the point, he wasn't sure whether he'd remember it and not smile or corpse or call me something else. So I have no idea what I could have been called, because there's a moment where you see Bryan and me lock eyes when he's about to go, Drake Maverick! And you can see the smirk appearing on his face, his eyes lighting up, and me sweating profusely, worried about what's going to come out of his mouth. But it was ever so funny that day. Very funny. And it made me feel 10 times more comfortable. It was my birthday that day.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
35 years old, I debuted for WWE on my birthday, which is like the weirdest thing ever. But, you know, I couldn't have worked out any better. Like, it's cool.
So it's... How long in wrestling by the time you got to WWE?
16. It was 16 and a bit. 16 years in October. I'm not a bragger of that, because that makes me sound like I, you know... If you say, oh, I've been in it... You know like one of them guys you meet in a dressing room? I've been doing this 16 years. And where are you? Like, it's one of them, like, maybe I should not mention the double figures. High double figures now. But it's... Oh my God, 16 years, what? I still look 25. Please tell me I still look 25. I've had no work done. I still look 25.
Still 25.
I've got my youth.
Because I've known you for 6 years. So, because you did... TNA's British Boot Camp.
Yeah.
You did it. There was a bit of filming for that. It's the first time I met Jeremy Borash as well. Mm-hmm. You did a bit of filming for that. I think it was Progress Chapter 2 or 3.
It was something. We gate crashed your show, I think, on the day, because I had no idea that we were even doing a show.
Yeah, we got asked. I think JB asked us if it was all right, like, that morning. And we were very new to wrestling at the time. We were just like, yeah. Sweet. And obviously, Marty was part of it, and Marty was wrestling for us regularly.
Yeah.
And you were part of it, and the Blossom Twins were the others.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never met you. Here's the thing, I'd heard of you, because Gemma, the lady who did most of my tattoos...
And a wonderful job she's done.
She's done a great job, and she's engaged to Rob, who does all our merch and graphic designs, so she's still around Progress in a kind of weird way. In that... I remember her talking to me when she was tattooing me once, talking to me at great length, knowing I was a wrestling fan, talking to me at great length about you and about how cool she thought you were. And I was like, oh, that's the name. Because the name of your previous name, Rockstar Spud, sticks out in someone's head because it's an unusual name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if, let's be honest. I mean, you're probably used to it now. It was your name for a long time.
I don't think the audience, like, when. It's weird, because when I go to different buildings, still people call me Rockstar Spud, or call me Rockstar. I don't get called Maverick or Drake Maverick. Honestly, it's very rare, and that's like weird because of the machine that WWE is. It's you know, it's still a new name.
It's still fresh,
I think, and like, and I take it as a wonderful compliment, because it's you know, it shows that your body of work everybody actually viewed and saw and like remember. So like, it's not. Or bad thing, but it came just basically from I was called Spud, and I had to turn, you know, I decided that I wanted to turn myself into a bad guy of all the darker, more evil, sinister form of myself, and the only way I think that came as an accident, because I wanted to be a rock star, and then I just thought to myself, why don't I just eliminate people guessing what I am and just tell them Rockstar Spud.
Yeah.
Or one day I'm going to be Dr. Spud. I've got a story about being a doctor as well. Also, like, today I'm going to be a Pediatrician Spud. You can be absolutely anything you want, but I'm just telling the audience what I am before I came out. And it was just kind of... I feel I was kind of smart the way I went about being heel, because I hadn't been it, but I was only doing it on very small shows that didn't have a lot of, at that time, internet reach that people wouldn't see. And then slowly crept it into, like, I don't know if you remember the promotion Triple X.
Yes.
So I asked them if
in
I
Coventry. Coventry.
Yes. Yeah. So I'd done it on some small shows before then, but I knew that the hardcore of hardcore forum guys, as they probably were, like, or
Hi, Twitter Glenn.
Guy. Yeah. Glenn! Really?
Glenn was,
I want to see all your reviews of my matches and still not care about them. So, or your opinion, Glenn. Can this turn into a burial of Glenn Joseph?
It normally is.
So, and I put myself on that show, and because it was such a shock to everybody, they were like, oh my God, like this is... And just kept it on the down low, but like people then start talking about it. Like, I thought, oh, what's this thing I need to see? So I had to go certain places in order to see it, and then they were telling more people about it. And then Alex let me do it at the FWA, but he actually gave it like the full presentation that it deserved. Like,
I remember seeing one of your proper big entrance ones.
Yes, it was. I did one in Birmingham. I'm a terrible singer, everyone. So, you know, that's the point. I'm a bad guy. You should not like this. So he gave the full presentation of it. It was wonderful.
Mm.
Problem was, it was so standout and wonderful that it got the wrong desired reaction in regards to being a bad guy, I felt. Even though I tried with my work, it was just so outlandish, it would outshine everybody that you were performing against. So, you know, that's essentially where it came from, and I just, like, carried on grafting. I never thought that British wrestling, or myself, or half the people that I grew up with would be in the positions we are now.
Mm.
It's why when I look back at photographs, like, they were so long ago, and I can't imagine myself being back there anymore, but it was just... There was a lot of people that I don't think get the credit that they deserve that grafted for a long time in front of 30 to 50 people just to keep this scene alive.
Yeah.
And I just think it's underappreciated sometimes, and it's a shame because not all of us are going to get the recognition we deserve, and like... And that they deserve, then they're not going to get it. And I think that's a shame. But now it's happening, and you never thought it would happen, but it's happening now. And like, it's an amazing time. It's just
well, this is the thing I think that people don't appreciate is if you knew nothing about British wrestling at the minute, you can go every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can probably go and watch a wrestling show within 100 miles of your house that has at least 200, 300 people at it.
Yeah, incredible.
Even when we started Progress 6 years ago, that wasn't a thing. Like, the fact that we got 300 off our first show, we were told, was insane. And the more you learn about it, like, because I was into my wrestling, but wasn't super into British wrestling, so I had no real concept of what was going on. Glenn was much more into the British stuff than I was. And for me, British wrestling was Johnny Saint, World of Sport, and then it was the British Bulldog, and then it was Doug Williams.
Yep,
that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was only when we started doing shows that I sort of delved into it a little bit more. But people, if you only go to a show now, you'll be like, oh, surely British wrestling's always been like this.
Nope. And that's why a lot of, you know, and this all young wrestlers out there that are in the UK and stuff. That's why sometimes, like, there are them gentlemen that are backstage that have been around a long time, and they don't mean to come across salty. It's just that, you know, there was a lot of people that took a lot of bumps and a lot of injuries, and there's been a lot of people seriously hurt, including one of my best friends, that before this, like, really did work to keep this alive and pay, you know, hopefully that there'd be this platform that there is now.
Mm.
And the fact that there is now, someone is going to walk into the business and into wrestling, and the first thing they're going to get is 500 people.
Mm.
And they're going to be thinking, oh, we only got 400 in. God, that show was crap.
Yeah.
My God, to get 400 in at least once every 6 months.
This is going to turn into that the Yorkshireman sketch on Monty Python, isn't it?
Oh,
I used to work.
I hope not. I don't want
27 hours of day out mill.
I'm not that old. No, I like to think I'm not. Everyone gets surprised when I tell them how old I am, and like, that's lovely, but it's you know, maybe it's my maturity. Gotta work on that.
I think so. 16-ish years in, like, so when your first show you wrestled on. Also, I want to, before I get to that, where did the spud part of your name come from?
I was a massive, massive ECW, Dudley Boys, Spike Dudley fan.
Right.
And I wanted to be in the Dudley Boys somewhat. I also loved New Jack. I also loved Masato Tanaka. I loved Mike Awesome. but it was going to be Spud Diddley. And then, yep,
nice.
Yep, awful. Then I watched Trainspotting and the character Spud in that.
Oh, of course.
And I was like, it can just be Spud. It'd be wicked. And that's all I could afford to put on my purple camouflaged T-shirt that I'd all cut off like New Jack, with my white tape all over my fingers, just like New Jack. So I could only afford four letters for this one T-shirt. So that's why it was Spud, with a capital U and a capital S and a capital U. Nice. A lowercase p and a lowercase d, because impact font.
Nice.
The best.
So
I was garbage, basically. I just copied people because I was a huge...
That's how everyone starts.
I still use the Dudley dog to this day. The acid drop, as they call it, because for some reason, Spike Dudley was massively into acid, I believe. I don't know.
I think Spike Dudley's gimmick was that acid casualty.
Yes.
That was his gimmick.
There we go.
Which is one of the reasons that he sort of... Because if you remember in Beyond the Mat, he's really called Matt Heisen. An English... I used to be an English teacher. He used to be an English teacher, which is one of the reasons I've always identified with him. Yep. Spike Dudley, legit one of my favourite ever wrestlers.
The best.
Right? And there's that interview with him where he's covered in his own blood.
Yeah.
And he's talking and he's rambling.
Hello, taking bobs.
And you look at that and go, oh, that's where they got your gimmick from.
Yep.
Even though he might have been the cleanest living dude in the world.
Yep.
He had that look of...
That adrenaline look.
And clearly, someone like Paul Heyman looked at it and went, yep, there's his gimmick.
I remember my mother was at a show. Okay, I'm going to tell you what show it was. It was my third show.
Nice.
I was in a tables, ladders and chairs match.
Because that seems like a really sensible thing to do when someone's third ever show.
I did a splash off the top of the ladder and then immediately got up, not selling it, because one of the other opponents, a four-way ladder match, was standing on the apron. So I grabbed him, I ducked a clothesline while he's on the apron, gave him a dig, grabbed him by the head, and then did the Dudley dog from the inside of the ring to the outside through a table, hurting my back in so many different ways that a 20-year-old, probably 19-year-old should not. Landed right in front of my mother. The end of the match, you can openly see on camera my mother screaming in my face, don't you ever do this to me again. I will beat you harder than any of these wrestlers here. Don't you ever do this to me again. And I think that's like that.
There's a weird thing about the adrenaline of wrestling that I think people don't get. Now, bear in mind, I've never wrestled. I've never had an inch. Oh, I tell a lie. When I was 18, 19, maybe 20, 21 when I was at uni and I got in a tape trade and I maybe would have, and I was more athletic, I maybe would have considered it. But I was never very confident. I think that's the thing that kept me away from it. But if you fast forward to when we did the storyline with Jimmy beating me up, like, because I didn't have a bump or anything, he just beat me up. But the buzz I got off of it afterwards, and it wasn't, I didn't get a buzz out of me standing tall over someone. I got murdered for 10 solid minutes and then I got carried out. Like, and my wife will always tell people that she got in the ring with me crying her eyes out, and she knew what was going to happen, told her, but she got in the ring with me after, and because I've been knocked out, and as I came around, my wife's in front of me, and I just went, the first thing I said was, how'd it look, that was so cool, and she, bless her, she covered me with her hair, because she had long hair at the time, covered me with her hair, and just went, I was like, oh yeah. But, and then all the way home, I couldn't stop talking about it. I was like, did it look cool? And she was like, yeah, but he knocked you out. I was like, yeah, but I bet it looked really good. And I think that was the point where I got it.
One of my favourite ever matches was like Masato Tanaka versus Spike Dudley, where he just literally... and because,
properly launched.
But he clotheslined Spike's missus and knocked all her teeth out, and that was the motivation for it. And then Spike gets in. And it was so realistic the way this small man tried it with this 6'5 giant. He just got launched. But he kept getting back up. And I was like, this is the best. I could do this.
What was the match you had for us where you, right before you went through the curtain, you nudged me and went, just to annoy Glenn, I'm going to do all the moves. I forget where it was.
It was the first time you've used me. And I was against Robbo. You know what my favourite part of that night was? Got backstage and John was just staring at me and I'm like, you're all right, mate? And he went, that was amazing. That was amazing. I'm like, what? I didn't do anything. He goes, but it was amazing. Like, and all I did was sell.
Yeah.
I didn't fight. The thing was with that, it was just that I didn't fight back because it was something I got taught at OVW, because if you fight back, they've already seen it.
Mm.
If you get a little bit in, they've already seen a little bit, so you've already got a measure of revenge.
Mm.
But if for 10 minutes you're just taking a beating and you're getting lower and lower and lower, they don't think there's any hope.
Mm.
But then there's something that makes them feel that, oh, we ain't going to take no more.
Mm.
And, like, I was thinking about, like, I really wanted to make a good impression, because it was, like, the first time you guys had booked me, and it was, like, in Birmingham as well. And I do love my hometown. I'm a massive fan of myself and wrestling my hometown, because, like, it's the only place I'm over, I'm going to be honest. So, shoot me, I don't care. I'm like, it's the only place I'm over. So, forget it, end the podcast. No, I was really, like, just wanted to put in a good performance, but also wanted to put in a performance that was different.
Mm.
And it was a performance, because I hadn't wrestled in my hometown for so long, just a performance that was just like, this is who I am as a performer, and I tell stories.
Yeah.
And I just, no matter what performance I do, I just want them to care. And I feel I'd accomplish that. I just want them to care. And it's not about me getting my stuff in, or I don't have stuff. I have, you know, I have just believe in me.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and get accomplish that, like get the people to believe in me and want me to win. And that's my stuff. And if that's my stuff, I am happy with that. But like signature moves or anything like that, I'm just that babyface that you want to win. And if I'm that heel, I'm that little turd you want to see get his ass whipped. Mm. That's all. I just want people to feel something, and that's what I believe this business is about. Feel it in here.
Yeah.
Like all Paul did was shove a bow tie in my mouth, and that was the first time that I'd done anything but get beaten up. Paul was like being cocky because he thought he'd had me, and I just pulled this out of my mouth and I stared at it. But I looked around at the people, because my wrestling sensei was Hulk Hogan, and I watched him, and I just adored the way all he had to do was give them a look.
Yeah.
And people just felt, and you could hear the shiver in the audience, and it was like, you know, like, and you just look at the people. In other words, like, I've looked at this bow tie and I look at them, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And then you throw it down, and it's the first time you got back on your feet. And then Paul's like still being all cocky. So there's one thing I regret in that match, and that was I spat back at him.
Yeah.
And that and they reacted. And that was the first time they reacted. But I shouldn't have done it, and that was an audible by me, because when he bangs me into the turnbuckle, then I pop my head up, and it's the first time I've not taken the beating of, like, I'm not having this anymore. But I really, the only thing I'd have changed about that match, and that's because the audience reaction, if I'd have just taken out that spit at him in retaliation and just done it there, because that would have been the first scene that I got, because I'd already got some out of it. Do you know what I mean? I'd already got a little bit out of him, and I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
They weren't ready. Like, they were ready, but I premature let it out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I should have waited just a little second, but I tried it, it failed, you know, like, I won't do it the next time, but, like, that was it. And if you notice in the comeback, I didn't pin anybody.
Mm.
I didn't pin him once. And the reason I didn't pin him any once, because that audience didn't stop making noise. They didn't stop making noise, and the noise grew and it grew and it grew and it grew, and then he took it away, because he's a bad guy. Because if you keep giving them... I feel like if you keep giving away covers, it don't mean anything. And you're restricting yourself getting more reaction, getting more over, let's say. Like, it was just... I think that was one of the best matches I've ever had. I honestly do. Just because it was for the first time I left and was like, I'm really... like, and I loved Paul Robinson just being a bad guy. I was like, that was... I love that. Like, I was really proud of that, and I'm still proud. I mean, you can hear me now just talking about it. I was really proud of it.
Yeah.
And people can probably, if you watch it, let me know what you think of it, but like, I was really proud of that one, and I think I've done some stupid stuff. I've done some really good matches. One of the best ones I've ever had, that was.
I remember at the top, even just for your entrance for that match.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one. I told you, Birmingham, only place I'm over. And Bon Jovi's the only part that's over about it. It's not me. None of this is me. Like, it's the hometown pop, and it's Bon Jovi. It is not me. I'm just the dude. But I happen to be 5'4 and 141 pounds. Apologies. I'd love to be a lot bigger, so I'd take over this entire planet. But, yeah.
So, you mentioned you were 19-ish when you started wrestling. So
18.
Did you... So, two things. Two-part question. Christ. Did you always want to be a wrestler?
Yep.
And because, like, you just brought up your own size, right? Did you always think... Did you believe there was a chance of you making it despite of your size?
Yeah. Because
obviously you have, but... And wrestling's very different now. If someone starts training now at 18 and they're 5'4", it's probably not that much of a problem. 16 years ago... I mean, we weren't quite Land of the Giants, but it would have been more of a problem than now. So, I mean, did you find much sort of resistance to your size and stuff?
There was resistance from other people.
Yeah,
there's been resistance from other people in my life as well. Whether that be people who I conversate with, people who I've worked with, and when I say work in normal jobs, yeah, 9 to 5, women I've dated. There is a fear of someone that's so secure when they have every right to be insecure, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And
well, you don't have, no pun intended, small man syndrome.
No.
At all. Like, so I remember meeting you when you came to that Progress show and then bumping into you a couple of weeks later when I was supporting Regal in Birmingham, and that's where I'd been paying for my parking ticket and chatting, me and my wife chatting to you for a bit.
Yeah.
Because you were Dave Mastiff, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And just having a chat, and I remember going away going, what a lovely bloke. And then we've kind of been mates ever since. And like, even today when I said I was going to be interviewing you, my wife was like, oh, he's such a nice bloke. And it's just, you've never once displayed, like me and you occasionally rant about stuff about
wrestling,
but that's because we're mates. But you've never had that sort of attitude that I think, neither does Paul Robinson either, who's someone else's.
Yeah.
But I think people presume that. But I've never once seen it in you. And I mean, you must have been... Even when you were younger, you must have been fairly sort of chilled out about this sort of stuff.
I was bullied.
Right.
And, I threw some punches.
Mm.
They didn't work.
Mm.
And, I've been in fights. And I've not won many a time.
Mm.
I'd have tears streaming down my eyes, but I'd keep standing up and try and fight again. And I'd be laughed at for crying.
Mm.
But... I'm in pain and it hurt, and yeah. I'll stop it. Tell me anybody that's when they're not in pain, they don't want to shed tears.
Yeah.
Call that weakness. That's fine, but I won't stop throwing punches. And it's I was very, you know, it just came from you got to accept that you're this, but you know, like I don't know, man. Like, it's just acceptance. Mm. I'll be honest, it took a while. It does. Like, I'd say mid to late 20s was when the acceptance kicked in. Like, you have no idea how insecurities come with the job in regards to your size. Like, I'm surrounded by, like, my best friend's EC3.
Mm.
Look at him. Yeah. Look at him. I'd adore to look like Mike.
Yeah.
Adore. And I work every day to try to be. Or try and, you know, get near there, or try and just look good, you know, out of respect for the people that do put the time in, out of respect for this job.
Mm.
And it's, I wish I'd have done it when I was younger, because I don't think people would have messed with me as much.
Yeah.
But like, I was the small kid, and my social position at that time was, I had a mouth on me, I knew that. I didn't shout and insult people, but I used naughty words, and I, you know, sometimes mouthed off a bit, but I never got into an altercation because of my mouth. It was always my mouth got me out of it a lot of the time. Like, and there's been situations where I've nearly been mugged in like streets of Birmingham where I've gone, mate, I'm going to be honest with you, I've got a bunch of CDs in this HMV bag, you know, you can beat the hell out of me, or you can do it and you can make yourself feel better, or you can just walk away because there's people that are watching. And it's got me out of situations. Yeah. It does. It's just, and I don't have the gift of the gab. I don't think. I mean, I can talk, you know, I can conversate, but I don't think I've got the gift of the gab. I'm like, I'm no Trent Seven, you know what I mean? Like, that's
no
a,
one's Trent
that's
Seven.
Another level of British wrestling, Del Boy, that is. But like, that man's a genius, I think. Like, I think Alex Shane as the gift of the gab, I think he's a genius. I don't have that, but like, you know, I can articulate, you know, talk to someone and stuff and conversate, but it's like, I've never cared about my size. Other people have.
Yeah.
Always. And it's that's when I knew that I'm not the one with the problem here. I'm very comfortable with who I am.
Mm.
It's a girlfriend where society's told her that you know, the boyfriend's got to be taller or she can't wear heels with a man that's shorter than her, makes her care about it, so she's got the problem.
Yeah.
A guy that is intimidated by someone that is very self-assured with himself, that's smaller than him, that's not in a managerial position and doesn't throw his weight around when he's in a managerial position, is the one with the problem. Mm. You know what I mean? There's that sort of stuff.
Have you ever had it that... And from my experience, most wrestling locker rooms are nice places to be and not what people imagine them to be like. But have you ever had it that anyone's refused to put you over or anything like that because of
many
height
times.
Difference?
Many times.
See, to me, that's... But to me, that's ridiculous, because think of, like, it's wrestling. If someone's over, they're over. It shouldn't matter if size and stuff like that and ego and stuff like that shouldn't come into it. And surely there's a size thing, just an extension of ego.
Yeah.
You're someone who, you know, one of the reasons I'm mates with you is you just don't have, you have enough of an ego to get by. Everyone should have some ego.
Massive.
But but you're not an egomaniac, and you don't need to be. And I'm not surprised at all that's happened, but... It makes me sad. Like, if you think how tall the best wrestlers of the generation are. Daniel Bryan's one of them.
Yep.
He's what, 5'8"?
I guess so. Yeah, I think so.
So he's shorter than me.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know,
I don't worry about what other people think. No. I really don't. That's what probably why I've just concentrated on what I'm doing. Those people that refuse, I understand, and I'll make it work regardless, and I'll work around you. You're the one with the problem. I'm just gonna do business like I've been told. I'm not the one that's gonna walk away from this, and promoter's gonna be like, he was difficult to deal with. I'm the one that's gonna be like, I'll do whatever you want. If you got a problem with it, mate, no problem. How do we make this work for what Gaffer wants here? Who's gonna be giving me my envelope with £20 in? That's what we're fighting over. £20.
Yeah.
Let's put this in perspective. This is a job. What really matters is that audience that's out there. If we get out there and they want to see the young boy triumph, you'll know.
Yeah.
If they want to, if they don't want to, then you'll know. It, you know, it's not about you. It isn't about you. It's not about me. It's about them. It really is about them.
And this is, I always think as well, the reason that you've stuck out to me as a performer is that I always look for people who are slightly different, and you are slightly different. For example, when you were in TNA, the thing that really made you stick out was that everything you got asked to do, you threw yourself into with 100% commitment.
Yep.
And made it work. But also, if I'm not a wrestling fan, I'm flicking through channels, and I see a standard, what people would think is a generic selection of wrestlers.
Create a wrestler A, B from SmackDown, B, Raw,
or 9. Or I see you in a brightly coloured suit, a little bit shorter than everybody else, wearing a bow tie. Straight away, my brain's like, who's that?
What is that? who put this on my television?
Who is this guy?
Oh no, I'm still watching. Why is he lying on the floor for that child?
Yeah, we'll come to that.
Then. Oh, God.
Just so I want you to put my kid over.
Hey, if you pay me, I'll do it. I really don't care. I really don't.
So, we know what your third match was. Who was your first match against? Can you remember?
It was myself and a wrestler called Snake. His name is Chris Gilbert, who is still a friend of mine to this day.
Cool.
Against X-Bones, who is named Bobby Barrett, who used to wrestle in the early days of Fight Club Pro, people will know, for any Fight Club Pro historians out there. And a wrestler by the name of Jack Storm. Jack Titchen, who is still my friend to this day. Anybody that has followed my wrestling path and the early stages of my wrestling path and that British wrestling era path will know who Jack Storm is and was, and he was a phenomenal, phenomenal bad guy, performer, and I had some of my best matches with him. Like, unbelievable. Like in my young days, like, me and him brutalised each other. Like, you know, like, we told stories, but we brutalised each other in regards to, like, we didn't hurt each other, but when we worked, it was physical, and we really enjoyed. We were best friends, like, you know.
Is he the sort of person, because obviously we're in this cool era now where, like you say, all of a sudden people second, third match in the wrestling in front of 400 people.
Yep.
Is he the sort of person that is he? I mean, there's probably more names of people that would have benefited by the scene being as healthy as it is now when they were performing. Because by the way, you tell by the way you talk about him, obviously, you know, you're someone whose opinion I trust. So if you rate someone, like, if he'd have been in the scene now, do you think he would have blown up massively?
If he'd have, God bless you, Jack. If he'd have hit the gym properly, yeah. I'll show you some of his stuff.
Yeah,
I'll give you some, and you'll be like, you'll be begging him to come out of retirement.
There must be a few people that probably pop into your head that just,
and Jack, and this
if they'd stuck it out for a few more years, they would have seen this.
This is the measure of Jack the person and the measure of the scene. Jack left the scene because of the people, and that should tell you everything about what it was like at times.
Yeah,
he didn't think the promoters were as professional as they could be. He didn't think the lads' minds were, their heads weren't in the game, really. Like, they were, you know, not, there could have been better people at times. Like, that was the reason he left. I didn't leave because I thought, this is what it is. But he was like, you know what, I'd rather settle down with my missus, start a family, and, you know, step away from it. And I was very upset by that because I just knew how good he was. He was just that good. And I like, Luke Dragon Phoenix, he's come back on the scene now.
Yeah.
But Luke stopped, and it angered me when he stopped. And it used to anger me when people would stop. I'm like, but then I also said to myself, what, I know why I'm not stopping, because nothing's going to stop me.
Yeah.
The day I met Triple H for the first time, what I said to him was exactly what I believe every day I wake up and have done, and that's the only reason I carry on. I'm going to main event WrestleMania, and you might look at me like I'm mental, and Hunter might think, what the hell is he on about? We've got him, we want you as general manager at 205. You're going to main event WrestleMania. What the hell is this kid on about? He must be an idiot. I looked him dead in the eyes like, I'm going to grab a brass ring, cliche as it sounds, and I want a main event WrestleMania. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
I'm not here to just be collecting a check or like be ranting and raving on with WWE. The moment I wake up every day, that's what's on my mind. And, you know, I believe it can happen. Anybody that said to me when I was a kid, you'll never work for WWE, I believed it could happen. Mm-hmm. I really did. The day it did, I was like, oh. Oh, no. Oh, Lord. But, like, you got.
That was a happy day for me when that happened.
You got to believe, man. Like, and thank you. It was, like, you've got to believe.
But I think that's, it's a measure of you as a person in how happy so many people were when we all found out
that you were working for, like, people. I don't think it really sank in because you only see it on your social media feed. Yeah. And I did get a lot of messages, and it was wonderful. And anybody that reached out to me, if I didn't favourite the tweet or I didn't reply to it or I didn't reply to your message, thank you, because I said to all of them, every one of them were part of my journey. Like, sitting on the apron at WrestleMania, everybody that ever sold for me, took a bump for me, did absolutely anything, you know, said a kind word about me, said a bad word about me. Like, any part of that journey they were a part of, and anyone I ever met or encountered. But it was all down, it wasn't self-belief. It was watching movies when I was a kid, watching wrestling when I was a kid, and the stories that were told in wrestling, the stories that were told in movies, like, I know it's topic of conversation these days, but Karate Kid was one of my favourite movies because I believed in Daniel LaRusso.
Yeah.
My favourite movie of all time is Teen Wolf. I believed in Marty McFly, who wanted to be special, and I think about myself as, like, I want to be a wrestler. And then when you become a wrestler, sometimes you realise that, wow, some days I just wish I just want to be me. I don't want to be this fictional character, this wolf. I don't want to, that's what everybody wants to see, but I just want to be James for one day.
Yeah.
And that was what was so beautiful about Teen Wolf, because he got to the big game and he was like, no more Wolf today, I'm going to do this on my own. They're like, no, it's not going to work. Yeah, today I'm going to be me and we're going to do this. And he did it. It was wicked. It's just 80s cheese films, man. Like, but just, it made me believe. Like, I always remember my mum and dad used to argue a lot, and when I was younger. And my mum openly said it. She said it to me the other day, like, she'd have left my dad if it weren't for the fact she had kids.
Mm.
And, like, it's an absolute blessing that we were there. Because my dad, when I was younger, was just... He'd rather go out with his friends drinking and, like, go down the pub, because I don't think he was ready for fatherhood, adulthood, whatever, you know, I don't think he was all there for it. He just mentally was just still, I've got to be that guy, you know, with my
mate. Happens to a lot of people.
Absolutely. But every time I was home, when I saw my mum upset, I'd put on Dirty Dancing because Patrick Swayze made her smile. And then I put Ghost on. And, like, I mean, you ask any of my mates, Patrick Swayze's my hero, like Roadhouse. Cause, and I realised it a few years ago. Why do I love this bloke so much? Like, he's one of my favourite actors. He's awesome. It's only like 4 or 5 movies he was in that I thought he was great. But, like, those I love.
Mm.
But it was because he made my mum smile.
Yeah.
And it made me feel something. I was like, oh, I put a smile on her face. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I believed in movies and wrestling in his movies, small stories, and, you know, it's not even a joke when Vince McMahon goes, oh, we make movies in Beyond the Mat. They do.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful stories, and everybody, when, like, Eddie Guerrero won the world championship and everybody just lost their minds and just felt something, and we didn't even know him as a human being, but you just felt something.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just an example. It's just...
Well, no, it's a great example. It's
feeling something, and like, man, that's the beauty of it, man. Do you remember feeling something when Brian came back?
Yeah.
Like, because he was allowed to wrestle again. Beautiful.
I remember reading, I was just flicking through Twitter, and it came up, people were losing their minds, and like, because of me writing the book and everything, I'd already written a big bit about him retiring.
Yeah.
I've had to happily go back and edit. I've never been so happy. And, like, he's legit one of my favourite ever wrestlers. Like, anything like that. Like, I was watching, and bear in mind, I can't speak Japanese, but I was watching Kenta Kobashi's retirement speech in 2013. He, most people will be aware, is my favourite ever wrestler. I can't understand a word he's saying, but every single match he was in told a story. And, you know, one of the best reactions when he came back from his kidney problems and some of the stuff he was doing back then was absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, even in that case, it's just as simple a story as come back from injury, wrestling. But just, I can watch him doing that promo in Japanese and it still makes me emotional, because that's what wrestling can be.
Yeah.
Even if you don't speak the language, you can get it. And, like, this is the thing I was trying to explain to... I did an interview for the BBC website the other day, and the guy interviewing me was not... he was super respectful about wrestling, which is one of my... If I agree to do an interview now, I'm like, don't be asking me, is it fake?
And is it player fighting?
Because I hate that. But he was really really respectful. And he said to me, he said, why do you like wrestling? And I said, because it's the best art form on the planet. And he went, really? And I said, yeah, I love music and I love films, but it's better than both of them. Because it's both of them combined. And it's combined with theatre, and it's combined with comedy, and everything, all in one. And I love it, and I'm never going to stop loving it. You know, there's plenty of times that I might not play video games for a few months. There's plenty of times I might not listen to any new music for a year or so. But I'll never stop loving wrestling. And I think the one thing with me is that I've got no... You mentioned the link with your mum and wrestling, and with your mum coming to see you wrestle and stuff like that. Did she come again after that point?
Yeah. The next time she came was my debut for TNA at Wembley, but then she came to the Hair versus Hair with EC3, which I told her the finish of before.
Yeah.
And she was much more comfortable with the blood that time. But my mum, for the first time, like, came back. And, like, but the one response she had was me when I told her the finish. She went, oh, your beautiful hair. I went, what about me head, mum? She's like, no, it doesn't matter about that. I know you've done that before. I'm over that. Like, so it only took her 12 years. But, like, it was the first time after, like, I think my dad and my mum looked at me like, you made, like, because they sat there that night and they were like, you made this whole audience like, son, you're a wrestler.
Yeah.
That was the first time, like, my parents kind of were like, all right. you're in Wembley. You've made this place like just emotionally connect with you. Like you're Ahsan. We are proud of you. You're a wrestler. Yeah. and that felt really cool because that was the first night I spoke to Glenn.
Was it
first night I spoke to Glenn?
Oh, excellent.
I definitely say it's because he's a mark for me, but because of that, that was what it was. He's a mark for me. Just wanted a picture. Didn't you, Glenn? Toss.
I mean, you did do that. I don't know if we've told this story on the podcast yet, but when we were at Access, Glenn did queue up.
Yes, he did.
To have a picture taken with you. If you've been to Access, you'll know this. And it's really weird now, because you're a mate, and Jack Gallagher's a mate,
yep.
And Pete Dunne's a mate, and watching them all like have big queues of people looking to have their photo taken with them, it's just like, this is the coolest thing in the world. And so you queue up for a picture, and often, because you're dealing with so many people, you'll queue up and you'll talk to someone, and you, as a wrestler, you'll sign something for someone, you'll post for a photo, and then you're not necessarily looking at who the next person in line is, mm-hmm. until they get in front of you. And presumably, right until Glenn got right next to you and asked for a photo. Because obviously we were working because we were there for Access. So he had a badge that meant he could have just skipped the queue, but he actually wanted to make sure
he
queued.
He did the whole line, and I was, I watched him, and he was getting closer and closer, and every signature I was doing, I was just looking up at him and just mouthing the most explicit obscenities at him, like, you, how dare you, just get it over with, just no, and he's savouring every moment, and I'm like, you.
So, before you went to TNA, did you? There was a few big British shows during your mm-hmm. your British run, wasn't there?
International Showdown. That was the Coventry Sky Dome.
Yep.
Me, Petey Williams, Chris Sabian, and Johnny Storm. I think is still one of the most charismatic entertainers this country's ever produced. He's brilliant. There were, you know, like Doug Williams was on the show with a. Was it a bunch of the Noah lads? They were on, and the main event, you know, you had CM Punk and Joe, and the main event was AJ Styles against Christopher Daniels, and it was like that array of talent. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Mizawa was who Doug was against in that tag. James Ty and Doug and against Mizawa and some Masterous, I can't remember his name. There was a few of them, but I was on a show with Mizawa, and it was like. I never heard of Mizawa until then. Look, seriously, because I'm not the sharpest when it came to Japanese wrestling. Yeah. But then the following year, Amazing Red was like one of my favourite wrestlers when I was growing up, and like I was in a match with him. He was in the ring with us, and then later on, Doug was in another tag match with Go Shiozaki and Kenta Kobashi, and like Doug was wrestling, and I'd never seen Kobashi before, and I understand why he's your favourite, because to me, Kobashi, when I watched him work, he was one of the only Japanese wrestlers that facially showed me charisma, and you could see what he's feeling and the fire in his heart and everything like that, so I really became a fan of his from that. Big shows after that, 1PW, there was that.
Was that the one in Doncaster?
There was the one, there was hundreds.
I did a stand-up gig, the worst stand-up gig of my entire career, in that same room in the Doncaster Dome. Like, I did a horrible Christmas gig there last December that was garbage. But all the time I was thinking, there's been wrestling in this room, so at least that makes it moderately tolerable.
Myself and, who was then called Sterling James Keenan, but now Corey Graves, we still talk about those days, because we used to... I'm having flashbacks now, like, of all the people that I've, like, did some stuff that I really enjoyed with. Like, I really enjoyed working with him. Because he wasn't anybody that anybody had heard of, and he came to a country and like he got over.
Yeah.
Like people knew who he was from that, and like I was very honoured that it be with me. And it was different then because the business was changing, the audiences was changing. John Cena was getting booed when he was supposed to be the babyface.
Mm.
It wasn't just the internet talking about, oh, I think he's crap. The audience was reacting at shows going, oh, I don't like you.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, and that was what was happening with me as a white meat babyface. I was the one getting booed in these matches, but carrying on playing the babyface, and you know, and then it was really rewarding when you'd win them over, because of your work and like you were, the story you were telling, and like that was a big learning curve.
Because
when it was first happening, I was very confused. I didn't know what I was doing wrong, and I was, you know, you get a little bit insecure about what am I doing wrong and everything. But one of the biggest things I've learned is, as long as they're reacting.
Mm-hmm.
you're doing your job right. When they're sitting on their hands and not saying a word, that's when you're not doing a very good job. So that was a big learning curve, and it was. I don't think there was much after that. Like there was the relaunch of FWA, but I don't think there was any really big shows from that. And I think that was when a lot of people were losing a lot of faith with is anything ever going to happen for us? And that is when boot camp came along. It was out of nowhere. It was just like, whoa! There's a ray of light here.
I mean, it must have been because obviously the you got the deal out of boot camp, which was great. But then you obviously ended up moving to the States.
Yep.
And like, was that like a huge sort of learning curve for
First
you?
Time I ever moved out of my house, ever. I moved to another country.
And so you still living with your parents before?
Yep.
That's amazing.
Until the age of 30, I moved out as soon as I got signed. I said I was going to quit wrestling at 30. Not because of like, I didn't believe I was going to think it, but I wanted to do other things. I wanted to travel for a bit and stuff like that. But then that happened. And then I was like, right, dream's still on. Here we go. I'm not going to go anywhere now. Now I've got to throw 2 feet into this. And if I can say that if they don't want me, at least I gave it my all.
Mm.
So, and recently I spoke to Bruce Pritchard about this because, like, originally the whole idea of the show was for the girls. And then it became, they were deciding on myself or Marty on who was going to pay off. And Bruce recently told me this, and it was brilliant because I've got a lot of respect for Bruce. He wanted Marty to win because then we've got a whiny little turd heel that's got an axe to grind, so you can bring him in as well. Wanted to take everybody. So Bruce is so smart. Like, I mean, everybody that listens to his podcast now, like, I mean, just being able to be like in a room with him, he's like, he's got such a great mind, and he's just a real good bloke.
Not met yet, but I'm hoping to.
Great, great man. Like, very one of them, you know, no need to be as nice as he is to me. You know, because let's remember, Bruce is from the era when everyone was giants, and if 5 foot four guys like
he was Brother Love.
Yes, he was. But like one thing Bruce has like said to other people a lot higher than you or I in our company in front of me, which he didn't have to. I won't name their names, but like he said like. Passion. I don't know if that exudes out of me, but I'm very passionate about what I do.
Yeah, man.
I'm very passionate about this, and like I hope that bleeds into every performance I ever give or ever do or any match I have. Like, just I love this. I absolutely love this, and this is like what I've always wanted to do. And
but I think passion's important. Like,
God,
I like doing stand-up. I love being around wrestling.
Yeah.
So whenever we do a progress show, like, when I say stuff about how much wrestling means to me, it's not... I'm not doing it to make people buy a ticket. I'm doing it because I mean it.
Yep.
Like, genuinely, the reason I pace around the ring before a show is because I'm nervous. I'm not nervous about the daft stuff I'm going to say. I've been talking for years. That's not a problem. I'm nervous about people appreciating and enjoying a show because I like wrestling that much. And I think anyone who gets to a good level, there's some people who can get to that level without the passion.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are just gifted in different ways.
Yep, good for them.
But I think the vast majority of people who get to a good level in wrestling are people who are passionate about it. And that's the reason you're now in WWE. That's the reason it's happened. How long were you with TNA? Because it wasn't...
4 years, was it? 2013 up until the end of 17.
Yeah, so...
Oh, nearly 5 years?
Yeah,
nearly 5 years.
I mean,
no, yeah, 4.5 years.
And that's a long time for it, to be in a company like TNA, because TNA did have a fair turnover of talent during that time. And the fact that you managed to, from day one, get yourself a job. Because often when people come through, you have to look at how things like Tough Enough have worked.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a different principle, but any of that, any kind of reality TV show putting someone into a wrestling environment... it doesn't necessarily always pay off. People who weren't tough enough didn't necessarily stick around for a long time. The NXT seasons haven't necessarily... Some of them did, but...
I was very worried originally because I was at OVW and I was there a year.
Hmm.
And it was around the time where they were letting a lot of people go due to budget cuts. And the reason I was worried is because not a lot of people have had their tryouts, so to speak, in front of the entire country that they live in.
Mm.
So I just didn't want to have egg on my face.
Yeah.
But OVW was the best learning experience I ever had, because I learned about what you could face, what pitfalls there are and stuff. Like, I value that year so much in my development and understanding of what this is.
Yeah.
It just, incredible place to be. And the people have gone through there that, and it's weird, but you have a bond with them. Like, I could walk up to John Cena and say, like, I was trained by Danny, I was trained by Rip, you know, and he's like, okay, and he'll ask me questions, we're both on the level, and when you're like, wow, this place really did make some... And
so look at, many people...
But look at the people on top now. Brock, Randy, John, Miz, all OVW.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. And, like, you know, as much as you can... There's not been a feeder system like that, and then the Performance Center came along. The Performance Center's unbelievable.
Mm.
Unbelievable. And that has done double what OVW did, you know.
Yeah.
And the limited facilities they had there and what they churned out is just,
yeah,
you know.
So, and now you're in WWE, which is...
What's happening?
Is do you sort of wake up some days and just go, I don't believe this is happening?
I haven't... I had all of that, but I felt all of those jitters when I was at... when I got signed with Boot Camp, because we didn't think it was ever going to happen.
Yeah.
I didn't get it when, with this time. It was like moving from another employer to another employer, which I'm very disappointed in myself for not enjoying that process more.
Okay.
It was more of, it was more of a transfer of employment for me. And then when I debuted, because I've not done it on such a grander scale as WWE television and production and everything like that.
Yeah.
But I've worked television before, so it wasn't
a weird step.
Yeah. But it was just nice to go out there and it was a nice conversation I had with Hunter when Mark Carano first brought me in. He goes, hey, you got the birthday boy, and I was like, oh my god, I don't know my birthday.
Mm.
Brought me to Hunter and he says, just go out there and enjoy yourself and happy birthday. That went a long way.
Yeah.
And it was just that sort of stuff where it's like, wow, this is a very nice company to work for. And, I'm just... The only reason I left TNA was because of financials.
Yeah.
And the only reason I reached out was because of financials, because it helped me become a better person, performer, understand this job more.
Mm.
Much like the time at OVW did this, even more so, because you learn how to work television. I got to main event Wembley Arena as a British wrestler.
Yeah.
And, home run. It was, that's not something you can do. I'm 5'4". That was what I was thinking at the time. I'm 5'4" and little guy, and I got to main event Wembley Arena. That was a WrestleMania to me. For any British wrestler, really.
Yeah.
And, for all anyone says bad about that place, they're very crazy, because that place was a great place to work.
Mm.
It really was. There was problems, but there was not one time did the talent ever let that affect them. The talent were the best.
Yeah.
And the talent really kept things going. It's, it's business.
Yeah.
You just, if you, it's like a normal job, you just go and get another one. Enjoying it more. I enjoy it more and more. Like WrestleMania, I really enjoyed.
Mm.
I really enjoyed sitting on that apron. That the best part was before the show. Sitting on that apron, just soaking it in. And I put an Instagram post up and a Twitter one. And it's like I said earlier in this, I just thanked everybody because they're the reason I'm there. Because for everybody that ever did anything for me, put me in a position to succeed or anything, without giving me a platform, I'm nothing. And neither's anybody. So I'm grateful, not to quote Brian, but from his speeches, but you should be grateful.
Yeah.
I am very grateful, and I'm not satisfied because I'm not hungry.
Mm.
And I'm so hungry I'm starving, because I still wake up every day and want to main event WrestleMania, like I told you, and I'm like, that's my dream, that's my goal, and if it takes 10 years, I'll still be here, guys, long as they'll have me.
Are you, obviously you're in a non-wrestling role at the minute,
mm-hmm.
doing 205 Live, but I mentioned this to you before we started recording, the fact that you seem so enthusiastic about it, and you're always putting up videos on Twitter and social media and stuff like that. And and purely from a success of the show point of view, people seem to really love what you're doing, and people seem engaged with what you're doing, and also, I love 205 Live. I know quite a lot of people on the roster, which helps. it's a cracking show, and you seem to really be throwing yourself into it.
Yep.
And enjoying doing it. Are you enjoying it both from a creative point of view, but also from a point of view that you are able to pass on your experience, and because you have a certain way of looking at wrestling, which mm-hmm. I always appreciate. I said this to you before. There's two people in British wrestling I like talking to about their opinion about in-ring stuff. You're one, Pete Dunne's another.
Yeah.
And are you enjoying sort of doing both sides of it, sort of being involved in it on screen, but also passing on knowledge and stuff to people?
I don't think I'm passing on knowledge.
You're not?
No, because I haven't been able to accomplish anything at WWE yet, so I don't think it's my place. I do offer, my input to things, not to speak above station or anything, but everybody's good with me.
Yeah.
And because I really want them to succeed. Mm. I'm not coming in there to get myself over. I remember the first conversation I had with Vince McMahon, he goes, walk and talk with me. We've got this role for you, and la-di-da. And I'm enthusiastic because I'm meeting the man. I'm meeting the man right now, Vince. And I was maybe I used a poor choice of words in what he understands it as. Sir, I'm here to do whatever you want. I'm here to get over. And he's like, really? That's not what we do here. We get other people over. Now, my heart sank when he said that. God, I've done something wrong. But I know how to do that too. And I said to him, I go, well, if I'm put in that position, I can do that too, sir. And, I'm trying to show that every day. Because, otherwise, if I'm not doing that right, then, my checks are going to stop coming. But it's, I want them all to succeed.
Yeah.
I want them all to, be what that show should have been from the beginning. Every one of them are just brilliant.
Yeah.
Every one of them. And it's, I'll go out my way to promote them. I'll find ways to promote them. I message the office every week. Can I have graphics? Can I have this? Can I have this? Because I want to promote them. I'm a 24/7 guy that wants to work for this to work.
Yeah.
And this is a 24/7 business. I live, breathe, and sleep it. I always have done. I want it to work. I want Mustafa Ali to go to WrestleMania. I want Cedric Alexander to go to WrestleMania. I want the audience to care about him. And I remember, I said to the writer of 205, the head writer, I said to him, I go, do you mind if, for the first time in the go-home for WrestleMania, because they used to have people come in the confessional booth thing. Mm. They do this confessional booth. It's like Big Brother. It's very good. When the lads come in and air their piece about what they're feeling. I haven't done it in a couple of weeks. I'm going to bring that up. But I don't think they've done it since this one. Maybe I blew it. But I asked them, can I go in the confessional booth? Oh, that's different. What do you want to say? I go, I'll send it you this week. And I cut this promo in my house. I'll show it you after. But I cut this promo in my house. And I sent it to them, and they loved it. But then they gave me, because what I would say is, you look angry. And I'll say, yeah, I am. Because I want this to succeed.
Mm.
And it's not anger. It's the way the passion's coming out. I'm like, come on. Look at these guys. Every one of you. Come to WrestleMania extra early and look at these lads. Watch them bust their ass and watch them absolutely kill it. And you are going to watch it and you're going to see it in their faces. And everybody is going to walk away from WrestleMania telling them that match was the best match. I saw Brock Lesnar. I saw Roman Reigns. I saw Daniel Bryan return. I saw Triple H, Ronda Rousey, Stephanie McMahon, Kurt Angle. I saw it. But that was the match that killed it. And it was on the pre-show. And I wanted everybody to feel, we're on the pre-show, look at us.
Mm.
And now I feel look at us right now. We're making traction. The people are watching. Look at us. Because I've got a huge chip on my shoulder when I hear that people don't enjoy the show. I'm like, really? Watch this. I'll make you watch. I will make you watch. because this is awesome. Buddy Murphy has come to this show, and they used to call him he called himself the best kept secret. He ain't a secret no more. Every week when he's on, you take notice, because he is having some kick-ass matches. Cedric is having some kick-ass matches. Mustafa Ali is cutting some of the best promos I've ever seen, and he's making you care.
Yeah. All the build-up to WrestleMania made me... And I like both those guys. Yep. I like them both before. But the build-up to WrestleMania made me care about them both even more.
You care about who... But you couldn't have called who would have won or lost.
No. I was like, I have no idea who's winning.
I can't remember for a long time where there's been, like, two people that were two good characters, and there was a GM there that was just simply promoting these two great lads. I don't think that's been happening for a while. It's usually like it's a shring shring and a swerve and a swerve and a swerve. But that was all it was.
Yeah.
Somebody that's promoting two guys that the way that they deserve to be promoted, and those two guys going out and giving the people exactly what 205 is about. And yeah. I love the role I'm in. I have great passion for it. And you know me, any role I'm put in, I put everything into. Absolutely. I just do not. You give me something, I'll make it work.
Yeah.
205 Live isn't about me, it's about the lads.
Yeah.
Because the lads are the ones that go in every week and bust their ass, and they're the ones that are giving you kick-ass matches. I'm not the one giving you kick-ass matches. I'm the one trying to convince you that you need to see this, and I believe every word I say. It's not written for me. I believe every word I say. You need to watch this show.
Yeah. So. Last question.
Uh-oh.
Because it's...
Is it late?
10 to 1.
We've got to get down the bar.
The last question. You main event WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Who against?
So, when you main event WrestleMania, and when I said this to Hunter, just because I'm the 205 Live General Manager, that doesn't mean you have to be an in-ring performer to main event WrestleMania.
Ah, clever.
Charles Robinson is main event at WrestleMania.
Yes.
You know, it's one of them things... Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder have main evented WrestleMania.
Yes.
WrestleMania 24 with The Undertaker.
Liberace's main evented WrestleMania.
Yes. The main event that I've always dreamed of, and my best friend have always dreamed of, is EC3 with me as his manager against John Cena. That is the match that we have envisioned in our heads that we'd love to happen. Just because... I know my place. EC3 knows his. John would just be the perfect foil for everything, and their styles are just so similar.
Yeah.
And I think we've all got the same brain for this in that respect. Like, I think if we all put our heads together, we'd make. I'd have my stake, and I'd be able to put the seasoning on there. But, you know what I mean? That'd be my stake. That'd be my stake. I ain't going. Glenn wants to know what room we're in. Do we have to?
No, don't tell him.
Which one?
Absolutely don't tell him.
Why?
Because
well, we'll charge it to his room. And if he walks in at the end, it'd be great. Just, and then he's walking in at the end. And Glenn Joseph, toss out. But, all right, mate.
let's go and find him.
Yes.
Where are you on social media before we stop?
At WWE Drake Maverick on both Instagram and Twitter. I don't have Facebook. I don't have Snapchat. I don't have Bumble. I don't have Tinder. so it's pretty much that's my world. I just done both of those. Please continue to support professional wrestling. A big thank you, graciously, from me to you.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
So that's me and the lovely Drake Maverick with Ransom on in the background. It was genuinely lovely to see him, lovely to chat to him. He's one of my go-to guys when I want to talk about British wrestling and get a different sense of... I know what I like in wrestling, but whenever I speak to Mr. Maverick, I learn from his years of experience and his take on things, which is incredibly smart and incredibly clever. He's one of my go-to guys. Another one of my go-to guys is Pete Dunne. Another one of my go-to guys is Chris Brooks. They're just people that I value their opinion and their input. Super awesome for him to spend some time chatting to me. We had a good laugh. It was genuinely great. So thank you very much for listening. Remember, some plugs. You can see Drake Maverick on 205 Live on the WWE Network. You can see me on progresswrestling.com/demand-progress.com or my own website, jimsmallman.com. This podcast is part of the wonderful Distraction Pieces Network. Support all of that jazz. And I will see you, fingers crossed, next week. Ta-ra!
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.